This is a conversation with Onur Alpsoner, founder of Countly, whose work sits at the intersection of data privacy, analytics, and AI. Onur shared his journey building privacy-first tools and the importance of transparency, open source models, and true data sovereignty. I love how he highlights the power of structured data, independent decision-making, and a strong team. Great. Very nice to meet you, Onur. Thank you for joining the Humans and AI podcast. I appreciate your time and your effort to come here. So, Onur, you've got a very interesting background related with data and privacy personality. So you've been in this field for over 13 years. So basically, you've been here from the beginning. Will you mind sharing a little bit of this background, the story from your story, and how do you start with Countly a little bit in a short way? And then we will go more in depth. Why was so important for you always focusing on privacy, data, you still keeping this well?
Yeah, Fleur. First of all, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure, really. As I was graduating from university, and this is quite a while ago, the mobile apps topic was just starting, right? So basically, Apple introduced the App Store, the iPhone, and I was like a booming sector of mobile applications. So like the story behind Countly pretty much ties directly to that, right? Because as I graduated, based mobile apps was a booming business model, and everyone around me, including myself, we were very focused on creating mobile applications. But the analytics part, there were quite weird things going on at the time. So I'm not giving any names, but the primary company that did mobile analytics at the time, their business model was completely based on giving you free analytics in exchange for your data, right? So they had an advertising business, so you were giving away the data for that part of their business. So that didn't sit well with me, right? So clearly, data is not just, okay, let me look at my user numbers, right? So it's part of my business, part of what you do. So it should be in your own control, right? You should own that completely. So we didn't have any solutions. So we said, okay, why don't we just build this ourselves? So that's pretty much the starting story of Countly. So based on our own frustration of, is nothing let us own our own data. Right? So that's why we started with Countly.
Okay, thank you. For Countly, the most important is privacy first. So what does mean privacy for you? Because I think for everybody it's a bit different, just the connotations. I would like to understand what does mean for you.
Privacy for us, clearly we are an analytics company, right? Sometimes like it's hard to talk about this topic while we might be seen as, okay, you are doing analytics. How can you be the one talking about privacy, right? Because analytics has somewhat bad association because of some incidents about larger companies losing data or doing somewhat shady things with the data, etc. But for us, analytics is crucial for every business. Right. So not only that, but also analytics and data are crucial for also consumers. So as a consumer, in order for you to have a better product, more personalized products, the customer, the company building that product needs that data and analytics. Right. But there is a way to do this without risking the data of the customer. Right. So that's what we believe in. For us, privacy means like this data is crucial, it's needed, analytics has to be done, there is no way around it, but there are good ways of doing it, right? So track as much as or as little as you need, let your customer know, protect that data with your life. So that's our approach to privacy, actually. So we are not denying the fact that's a needed thing, but also privacy can be achieved at the same time. So that shouldn't be an afterthought that you think about later.
Okay, great. So right now we are in a world of the world of AI. It's not anymore like just a trend. It's a reality. We live in very intelligence, artificial intelligence world. So as AI is getting better and companies are going to personalize more and more their ads for each person, because right now, probably, I don't know if it's true, but I guess so, like right now, you and I, we are talking. But this is, I don't know how is the privacy of Zoom, to be honest with you, because we are recording. But I feel like many times when I'm talking about something or I'm thinking, even I don't even type it anywhere, not even on ChatGPT or in Google, I can feel like I go, for example, to Facebook, let's say, or LinkedIn, and then I get kind of ads of the topic that was thinking in my mind. So I'm kind of like, what's going on? So having this kind of, this like an example, and I'm sure that you as well live that and many people around you. So how can a platform, like, for example, currently keep this data private from other platforms that they use it for targeted advertising?
Definitely. Yeah, actually, funny thing, Flor, like I just had this conversation with my mother. I think it was last week. So she was telling me, okay, you won't believe it, but I was speaking about something. And then I started seeing ads on Instagram about some of the things we were talking about. And I wanted to assure her that, okay, the phone is not listening to you. Probably you did related things somewhere, maybe search for something, and then they are connecting the dots. But I think that's the main problem, right? So we have the problem of trust. Basically, we don't trust anything we use these days, right? So because I think in particular, the problem is those tools don't really do enough to earn our trust, right? So I think for proper personalization, the first step is actually earning the trust of the user. So not by just, okay, here is the privacy policy. That is like 5 pages, just go read our privacy policy, but rather giving you hints, right? Okay, Flor, you are seeing this ad because of this, right? Or basically whenever there is a change to the platform, just informing you clearly what changed, what data is being used for what purpose, or how do they correlate that data, etc. So this might sound too complicated for the average user, but I'm sure like if we are capable of creating these amazing AI software, I think we can figure out these easier problems, right? So how do we inform our customers in a better way? To me, personalization is a must, right? Because otherwise software would feel quite dull, right? So I'm not just looking at from advertising angle. Of course, there are other dynamics there, but for a very long time, advertising has been like the primary economic formula of many companies, right? I hope the AI stuff doesn't go there. I don't want to really see ads popping up in ChatGPT. I hope that's not the future waiting for us. But if you take any software or any application you use on your mobile phone, clearly most of them are personalized, right? So I think that's a must, but there is a, I think I call it like trust first personalization, basically. It means the system is honest to you about what it knows and why it knows it. Two, they are honest about the practices, right? So right now, when we go to any website or an application, we need to give consent. So that those consent prompts, they're so complicated. Like I'm in the business myself, I don't even read them, right? So I reject by default. Okay, I'm not giving you any consent at all, except for the mandatory ones that I should be giving you to use the application. But basically, like those like custom companies are thinking like, okay, we need to use these 20 different tools, 30 different tools. I think as that market gets complicated, right, the explanation to the user also becomes extremely complicated. How am I going to tell you, okay, Flor, use my app. It's a banking app, but here are 40 other tools that I depend on. So you need to give me consent for certain parts of that application. You wouldn't do it because you can't understand that, right? So I think that complexity just makes it impossible for any business to really explain themselves to their own customers. Right? So I think we just need to stop and think about the setup, right? Do I even need this many tools? Why am I using these tools? What is my responsibility to my own customers? Right? So can I explain myself to them? If not, what, where should I look at? So I think all of these are part of the personalization. They might sound boring tasks to go through or do, right? But I think these are the things that actually make the real difference, not like popping AI to your product and suddenly it feels more capable, but rather like, okay, take a step back, evaluate the larger picture and really think for your customer. So everyone talks about being customer first, But we rarely see it in practice. You know what I mean? I don't really see a lot of customer first companies these days. It's always racing towards something. Like for AI companies, it's AGI, right? For your normal consumer product, it's growth. Like how do we acquire more MAUs? For your average business, it's revenue, showing that they are growing so that they can attract more VC money, etc. So I think we have to really look back and or take a step back and reevaluate all of these decisions. I took a quite broad stance, but I think these are all part of a trust first personalization, because otherwise I think we are only going in a worse direction right now, because given everyone is afraid of AI, it will not get better actually when we think about it.
Very interesting. I really like how you connect privacy, what is meaning privacy for you, with trust first. I found it very interesting that link that you just made. Talking a little bit about companies who are not really following that real privacy thing. I had a podcast in the past with a company called Permission, which they do something, they don't do what you guys do, because they do, it's more like they have data and they ask the client, okay, do you give me permission to use your data? So basically that's why the name is Permission. In your case, it's more like privacy first is the most important thing about the data, right? Are there any other companies or leaders who follow something similar as you do in the market, and like you guys partner or support each other, for example?
Yeah, great question, Laura. One part of Countly that I missed to explain in the beginning, we actually started Countly as an open source product. And the primary reason was, I think that's the best model that actually promotes the idea of ownership, right? So because it starts from the idea that, okay, I'm giving you the code literally that I built, so you can check it out yourself, vet the process, what the software does. It's completely transparent and you can deploy it on your own server and run it in wherever location you want. So I would say any open source cultured organization would fit into what we are trying to achieve, right? So I think open source is the most visible thing that's being done right now for the concepts of data privacy, ownership. So taking back the control, because I think that's, at the end of the day, that's the only thing that really gives back the power to the business to do things in their own way. So we don't necessarily partner directly with open source companies, but we also use a lot of open source ourselves, right? So we have built Countly on other open source software, and a lot of things around you are actually built on open source software. So I would say if I want to basically put a spotlight on anything, it would be open source, right? So I think we should, I'm sometimes seeing some skepticism against open source, right? So, okay, open source is free software, thus it will be low quality. That's certainly not true at this point in time, right? Or some companies have even policies against open source software because they're afraid of security vulnerabilities of open source software, etc. Again, not true. If anything, open source is less likely to be vulnerable because there are a lot of eyes on any open source software, etc. So yeah, that would be my angle. And I think if we tie it to AI, I'm especially interested in open source models, open source weights, any open source technology that actually helps you achieve a more ownership about the AI stack are all areas all customer or companies should be looking into at this point in time. Yeah.
Interesting. You also mentioned, not in the interview, but you as well talk a lot about data sovereignty and autonomy, right? But right now in the age of AI, it's becoming an issue. What are your thoughts about it?
Yeah, definitely. So it's becoming a big issue, right? Constantly, I find myself in these kind of conversations, right? We are primarily an enterprise-focused company. So I get to speak with a lot of large companies daily. we get their point of view. Also, we are users and creators of AI ourselves. So we are on the other side as well. The way I see it, most businesses, the way they are trying to adopt AI is by just expecting magic, right? Magic as in, okay, we brought in the model and it will solve all of our issues suddenly, which doesn't work because most of those organizations also have the problem of they are skeptical about what should I share with this AI model. But I think the core problem most companies have is they don't really have a structured, proper, organized data in order for AI to be useful to them. So I think that's why most AI projects in these organizations stay in the pilot period, because it becomes almost impossible for those companies to show the real value of the AI at this point. I think for any business listening to us right now, the first thing to do is to accept the fact that AI is just another type of software. It's just a bit harder for us to understand because it's much more complicated than the normal type of software that we know. But at the end of the day, it's designed to amplify things. So I think that's the best way to put it. So if you don't have good things already, it will not suddenly amplify those good things for you. So if you give it a mess, it will give you just another type of mess, but slightly sounding smarter. So that's what it will do. So I think in the age of AI, like right now, of course, we are moving the AI, especially the frontier model space is moving so fast. Even we are having a hard time like catching up in terms of, okay, which model should we use now? At some point, we thought about investing in hardware, but then we were, okay, like hardware will be obsolete in 2 years, 1 year. Can we really afford that kind of investment? So we didn't invest in that. Every day, there is something new. But I think instead of panicking, right, so all the businesses should just step back and think about their data first, right? So do I have a company-wide data strategy? Is my data structured? Is my data clean? Because if you have all of those things, when you add the model, you already have what you need. You don't need any additional magic, right? And at this point, I would say, for example, which AI do we use, right? So we are saying we are like a data privacy-centric platform, but using a cloud AI provider doesn't really align with that too much. But at this point, we have to have to use a cloud-based AI model. But what we do is we abstract the layers, right? So first is data preparation. Second, we share with AI as little as possible. Not, okay, AI, this is the raw data. Just make sense of this data for us. But rather, okay, AI, here is an abstracted, pre-calculated data. It just creates some insights from this thing, right? So I think this approach in the long run is super useful because I know edge AI or self-hostable models will be, things in the very near future. Right. So right now, not so much because again, it's more about who creates the more powerful model. So it's a race, but inevitably edge AI, AI running on our devices, AI that you can self-host, just like how you can self-host a software like Countly right now. I think those are not going to be too far ahead, in my opinion. So basically, when that happens, all that preparation, all that boring, seemingly boring work that you do about your data will become extremely meaningful.
Okay, great. Thank you, Onur. It was very explainable. So I really like it. Onur, you also bootstrap your company, and I know how hard is that. What are the three lessons that you have learned during that process when you build Countly?
I think just about the bootstrapping topic, Flor, we can probably have another full episode. It's hard, right? So I see a lot of posts on LinkedIn super glorifying like bootstrapping. Sure, I'm happy about it now. Certainly after 13 years of building Countly, at this point I can say like we are independent. we can take whatever decision that aligns with our vision, and we can spend our profits on things that we want to build further. But only after this much time I can really say it. So in the beginning, it was quite hard, right? Because this is maybe somewhat specific to us, I would say. And honestly, like I'll be super honest about this, bootstrapping in the beginning wasn't necessarily like a choice, right? So I didn't go, okay, I will just bootstrap this company and grow it like that. But rather, I had a lot of VC meetings actually in the first few years of Countly. But when you think about, just imagine 13, 12 years ago, you are an analytics company, you are focusing on data privacy, self-hosting, infrastructure ownership. Those weren't really sexy topics per se, right? So I think that's the right word to use, because these terms only become sexy when there is something else pushing for those. For example, GDPR kind of regulations. So right now it's happening again because of AI. Right? So because of AI, now everyone is talking about, okay, how do we own our data, self-hosting, right? So like those concepts again became a thing. So essentially I realized that, okay, I'm not going to chase the regular path, right? Clearly this is not a fit for us. So we have a certain vision. And I think we internalized the fact that for us, this will take time to build, right? So because we want to build an entire platform, not a simple dashboarding tool. And we wanted to stay independent, right? So we want to basically draw our own path in the market. And right now, I'm glad that we did it. But I think if you think about the pros and cons, like obviously bootstrapping gives you like a more enjoyable experience, I would say, right? Because the other part or other alternative requires you to have clear exit points for your stakeholders, right? So can your company exit in 5 years? So will you be able to raise the next round of funding? Will you be able to handle the pressure from your board? So those are things inevitably take you away from your main focus, which should be like building a great product, right? So yeah, if you ask me, like, would you recommend bootstrapping? Definitely, but be ready to take on all the challenges of bootstrapping, right? Like you will have to survive without money. You have to convince people to work with you to create the perfect solution together, not because of like a fancy valuation or stock options that will make them rich in 3 years, but rather they believe in the mission of your company. So I think those things, especially in the early days, are super hard to do because you don't have anything to show to anyone. So you only have yourself, your words, your explanations, and you have to make sure like the people listening to you believe in what you're saying. Yeah,
that's beautiful. And I guess that you have some support from your family. Not like it has to be financial support, but like they believe in you, because I feel like that make it everything way easier when someone believes in you. Because obviously, like you have a team now, you make it real, you make your dream real. So it's kind of, obviously people believed in you, but I feel like that part of, I feel like, I don't know, like maybe there's a person, sometimes you need just one person or one thing that it kind of really believe in you to boost that confidence in yourself.
Exactly. And also I think for founders that are trying to do it right now, there is also a lot of support online at this point, right? So you can find a lot of people on LinkedIn talking about the topic. You can almost reach out to any single one of those people to just chat. So like I have been in such conversations before. So I think that support group mentality definitely grew a lot compared to 10 years ago, I would say. Yeah, I think like resources, information, connections, network about the topic of bootstrapping is much stronger for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for joining the Humans and AI podcast again. Yeah, I appreciate this conversation a lot. I think that data privacy both, it's very important nowadays because we don't know what's going to happen. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Flor. Great meeting you. And thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks for listening to the Humans and AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human. one story at a time. See you in the next episode.